بين يدين تتكرر بجنود people, all people, despite where you live, whether it's in an underserved rural area or whether you're poor and can afford it, you should have access to communication, or you should be able to get a communication connection in your home or through mobile, or have access to the internet. So that's basically what universal service and access means. The Act also says that USALSA has to encourage, facilitate, and offer guidance in respect of schemes to provide universal access and universal service. So support schemes, sponsorships, and subsidies to foster the adoption and use of new methods of obtaining universal service and access, and to make the recommendations to the Minister of Communications on what constitutes universal access and what will be considered as universal service. The Act says that USALSA must play an advisory role to ICASA as well on any matter with respect to universal service and universal access. The last financial year has been characterized by visible signs of turnaround. Honourable members will remember that when we came to the committee in 2007 as well as 2008, we complained bitterly, like Lamisa did today, about funding and the fact that we have such an important mandate and we need to be prioritized in government spending. And we've made significant headway in the last financial year. I'm very pleased to report that we've seen major budget increases starting from next financial year to increase the capacity as well as to spend on projects, universal service and access projects in the fund. We have to go through a long process of giving confidence to both the Department of Communications and National Treasury that, one, we can spend the money, and two, we have our systems and processes in place to deal with increased funding. For the first time in the financial year, in the previous financial year, we also had a fully fledged board of 7 members according to the EC Act. We have functioning board subcommittees. We increased one subcommittee to focus on the important role of that USALSA needs to play in the policy space and with regards to research. And I would say also due to our challenges with the positions or with people, leadership, not having our leadership all in place, which we will talk about later, the subcommittees also, like Anita said earlier on, have to play a much more active role to ensure that there's strong oversight and strong strategic direction being given to the management that was at the start. So I've spoken about the budget increases that will fund the turnaround strategy, and we've also spent significant amounts of the last financial year looking at the strategy, realigning the strategy, planning on the new strategic focus and direction. Honourable Chair, you remember that when we did come to the committee the last time, the committee asked us to go back and revise our strategy to make a bigger impact on our area of work. And that we've done, and that corporate plan and strategy have now been completed. The board is myself as chairperson. Then we also have Professor Sean Parker, who chairs the subcommittee on research and strategy. Betty Maduna, who's the DDG at the Department of Labor, and he also sits on our audit committee. Ms. Vingisa Mzajume, she's a change management and human resources specialist, and she chairs the HR subcommittee of the board. You've got Professor Maredi Mpaslele, who's with us here today, and he chairs the fund's projects committee of the board. You have Berenice Francis, who is a risk management specialist, and she also participates in both the funds committee as well as the audit committee. And Dr. Gabriel Chelli, who's here with us today, and he sits on the funds project committee as well as the research and strategy committee. On the executive management, we have an acting CEO, and we'll talk more about the process of the appointment of the CFO and the CEO later on in the presentation. We've got a head of corporate affairs who's newly appointed, Makoto. we have an acting head of UCEF project. The head of UCEF project is Mile Lamani, but he's acting as the CEO, so his next second in command, Thabo Makaneke, is acting as that coach. Linda Mwebe, who's the acting CFO. Jimmy Mashiani, he's our head of internal audit, the type of graphical analysis. And we've got this vacancy is a newly created post. So when our new budget kick in, we'll be able to fill in this vacancy. That's for a head of research and charity. Phineas Mulele is the head of legal and regulatory, and Sharon Steerpers is the senior manager in charge of human resources. And as I said earlier on, previously and in the past financial year included, we could only deliver as much as the budget that we had. So the budgetary restrictions limited USASA from fulfilling its ECA mandate, especially in the area of research, to provide adequate advice to both ICASA and the minister, and to attract appropriately skilled staff and to retrain and reskill our existing staff. We still have a problem that USASA, it does not have the right people in the organization, so we have to go through a process of reskilling and restructuring, bringing in the different types of skills that we need to implement our mandate from next year. To date, we do not have a budget, but we have the budget now to implement it next year. That is the USASA budget. Honorable members will remember that we have two budgets. We have the USASA operational budget, and then we also have a separate budget that comes in to the Universal Service and Assets Fund. And that fund is made up of levies that are levied on the operators in telecommunications as well as in broadcast. The broadcasters haven't started paying yet, but at the moment it's 0.2% of their revenue going to the Universal Service and Assets Fund. So the insufficient funding that the insufficient funding for the user that came through from the National Treasury resulted in the fund not being able to fund infrastructure as well as connectivity projects. And these challenges have been addressed over the last 2 to 3 years with the DOC and Treasury, and the tide has started to turn for the user. On that note, I'll hand over to Vinile take you through the operational report aspects of our previous financial report.
Thank you, sir. Honourable member, I will start with the budget issues that have been highlighted, that previously we had a challenge when it comes to budget. The first slide, I'm showing the budget allocation from the year 2007-2008. If one looks at it, there is a slight increase, which has, of course, been linked to the inflation. There has never been a huge budget that would necessitate us to be able to engage on new infrastructure projects. But if one looks at the 2010-2011, you begin to see that huge change on the budget. And also, if one looks at the performance trend of USA, one would see that from the year 2004-05, there's been a lot of understanding, which may treasurer to be reluctant to say we allocate more funding than the USA has capacity to spend. But if one looks at the years from 2006-07-08, there's been an improvement in the capacity to spend up to the last financial year, which is 2008-09. The next slide is just confirming what I was saying. It's looking at the actual spending for the 2007-08 and 2008-09 and comparing the budget that we have for the current year, which is 2009-10. On the new project, we have an allocation of $400 million for broadcasting in summarization, which is split over a period of 3 years. For the next financial year, which is 10-11, there is an allocation of $200 million to assist in payment of SASA. Currently, USASA is participating in one of the working groups of the Digital Stronger, which is called the Health and Support. That is a working group that is focusing on the subsidy model and what kind of help will end users need even after they have received the set of subsidies. There is some discussion regarding as to what will be the best model to subsidize. We are still in discussions together with the DOC and the other stakeholders. The next slide is trying to show the flow of the project that we currently have and how do we move into a new USASA that will have more focused projects. In the current financial year, we're creating a baseline flowing from last financial year into this year. Creating a baseline in the sense of ensuring that there are all the rules of how to access the funds. But at the same time, we're dealing with the legacy projects. How do we ensure that those old projects are continuing to be sustainable? And also, looking at how in future do we deploy the new asset projects. One of the projects that we've undertaken, starting from the previous financial year, is called the definition project. The Act allows us to define the key terms, universal service, universal access, under service areas, and the needy people. And that is supposed to be done every 2 years. That is the project that was undertaken from the last financial year, but we completed it in this financial year by July. What should happen is, flowing from that project, once we define what are the under service areas, then the minister, if we make a recommendation to the minister and the minister is taking, then he will take that as a definition of the underserved areas and all those key terms. The idea is that beyond that project, we should be able to identify where exactly are those underserved areas. We will recall that previously the way underserved areas were defined, they were defined at a district level, and the focus was the penetration of the fifth line. And if one looks at the current scenario where there's more mobile phone penetration and there's more of convergence of these services through the process, one would expect that there would definitely be a new definition as to if we say this area is under service, what package of services that are not in that area. Now, the process that will flow from definition is that identification of those areas as to where exactly are they. And the CASA should at the end be able to declare that these are the underserved areas. That will guide all the projects that are looking at addressing the underserved areas in the country. Parallel to that flow of the project is the one I mentioned of dealing with the legacy project. In the previous financial year, we started the process of looking at rehabilitating or refurbishing these centers in order to hand them over to the relevant owners. Because one of the key weaknesses we identified was there were gaps in terms of ownership. There was no proper ownership. People would come in and think they will make money out of the center. When they feel they don't make money, then they leave the center. Those are the areas we're trying to strengthen with the handover. In this current financial year, we've taken that project further to get a service provider that will be able to manage this whole process within a shorter period. Because internally, we don't necessarily have the full capacity to manage that. The fourth project that we're looking at is the USAF manual. That is the manual that will give the rules, how do you access the fund, what are the internal processes if one has applied for the fund, and over what period. For the next financial year, we're looking at USAF that will focus on two key primary projects. First project will be the infrastructure. There are areas in our country where there's no backbone infrastructure. There are also areas where you will find there is backbone infrastructure, but people cannot access that part. That's why you will need the access project like your telecom, your community access center that will tap into that network. And also the issue of broadband. If we're talking about the infrastructure, in some areas there is the old infrastructure. However, it cannot provide the broadband services to the community. Moving into the second budget, which is the USASA budget, we also look into the previous allocation starting from the year 2007-2008. If one looks at the allocation trend, it's very much similar to the USASA, and you get a better allocation for the year 2010 and 2011, which will assist us in building more capacity internally in the agency. If one looks at the performance trend, it's slightly different from the USAF. USAF had a trend of not spending. In USAF, you had a trend where you would go into a deficit. We're hoping that will change as more allocation is done, as more allocation on the capacity building, which will assist in many projects. The next slide is trying to summarize the spending, looking at the actual spend for the year 2007-2008 and 2008-2009, and also look for 2009-2010, looking at the budget that we have.
Maybe just before the board members leave, then we must also extend our appreciation for them to come, although they cannot finish the entire presentation. So at least whether they win, they always say they will win. We must appreciate that. Maybe next time we will be looking in time so that they can finish their
speech. I didn't hear you on, but thank you very much, Dr. and Professor. We are very sorry that you have to leave, but we understand. Thank you, then. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May I continue? The next slide, we're trying to show the profile of the staff at USASA. It's taken directly from the annual report. It's trying to show the composition, both the staff, the low executives, and also the executives. On the human resource and capacity, the chair has mentioned earlier on that there's always been a challenge when it comes to internal capacity, and also looking at the skills that we have, you may find that there's some people who are misplaced in the position. The current project that we have to restructure the organization is intending to put people in the correct positions according to their skills, and also during that process to identify where do we need to build in more skills to bring that skill internally to the organization. As mentioned earlier on, that the complaints that we always have when we come to this building saying we don't have money, we need more money, at the moment they are being addressed. There is some increases on the budget, both the USAF and the USAF. One of the areas that we trying to focus our attention is to ensure that at the top leadership of the agency, all the positions are being filled. The chairperson will brief on the progress of the chief executive officer's appointment and also on the chief financial officer. We're also looking at appointing the head of recession strategy, which is a new position in the agency. Those we take as priorities because some of them have been vacant for quite a while. I will touch briefly on the audit report on the method of emphasis that have appeared on the annual report. One of the areas that has been highlighted in the report is the irregular expenditure of 9.4 million, which was incurred during the last financial year. The big background to that was there was the protest on the Dinaledi school. There was a budget of 11 million. That was approved by the board for management to implement the project. What did not happen for the 9 million was, after the board approved the project, management went on to stop the service provider. What did not happen was when the service providers were stopped during the signing of the purchase order, the then delegation of authority was saying anything above a million should be approved by the board. Now, the board approved the total amount, which is 11 million, not the actual allocation to each service provider. That's when management signed the purchase order to contract the service provider to FSU. After this was picked up by the internal auditor as irregular, management wrote a report and made a submission to the board to ratify. It was then ratified. The last amount in that 3 million before the service providers were given the purchase order, there was a submission to the board to say these are the service providers, then can you please approve. The second area of irregular and wasteful expenditure is the 451,000, where there was a service provider that was sought by the SASA. The CFO then instructed one of the officers to enter into an agreement, a cessation agreement, that the money can be paid to another service provider, and the SASA will pay. That irregular expenditure was attended to during the disciplinary of the then CFO. Another area that was highlighted was the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which amounts to 122,000, where the submission of pay at the end was not paid on time, and therefore there were some penalties. And this also forms part of the charges against the then CFO. What we tried to do, sir, after this, we tried to look at where are the gaps, either in the processes or in the policy. The delegation of authority has since been amended. One of the loopholes in the delegation of authority was it was referring to a fund management committee that would approve any expenditure that is above the 1 million. And that committee was never formed. That was the gap we identified. In the amendment, we are trying to remove that committee to streamline the process of approval. And another area we identified was the weaknesses in the supply chain management. We sought 8 specialists to transfer skills to the current manager under supply chain management, but also went further to have more workshops with the staff to take them through the processes on SAS. Because in some areas, the staff would be the people who would try to bypass the processes, sometimes unaware of the actual process. We had to make sure that everybody is trained on SAS. If I may, I will stop there and hand over to the chapter 3. Something I've noticed while I'm going through the presentation on the laptop and the hard copy of the presentation, there are pages that are not necessarily on the hard copy. I've noticed as I'm going through the presentation. I want to apologize for that.
Chair and honourable members, if I could just beg your indulgence to ask really, let's go back to the USAP slide, those slides here, USAP expense trend. Because I think for new members, it might be useful for you to just go into the project that we have on the ground. You know, it's no use telling you all about our plans and our strategy. The minister, after we did that with our new minister, he asked us after 2 hours of telling him about our strategy, but what can I tell the people? What are you doing to the people? What are you doing on the ground? So if we could perhaps just go back to that USF one. For new members especially, just to give them a sense of what are the projects that you have.
If I may, the projects that we, they are legacy projects that we have. There are also a few projects that we introduced in the last financial year. The legacy projects that Mr. Asa has been working on, the first one is called Cyber Labs. Cyber Labs are computer centers that were set up at schools. It normally consists of 25 to 30 computers in a classroom. There would be a server, and they would be connected on the internet. Previously, in the class, there was 25 computers. Then the 5 computers would be given to educators to use them. When we looked at the witnesses that were there on this computer lab, in the previous financial year, we had discussions with the Department of Education to say, how best do we make sure that these computer centers are used at school? Because in some instances, you find that you do have this nice computer center, but there's no educator that can teach learners how to use a computer. And in some instances, it's also not linked to the curriculum at that school. We had to go back to the Department of Education and say, how do we work together to ensure that whatever computer center we put out there, there will be plans from the department to make sure that it is utilized. Now, in the last financial year, there was this project on Dinalede School. It was a partnership between USASA, the Department of Communication, the Department of Education. The primary focus last financial year was in the Northwest. Department of Education said they would take one province at a time, they would put about 28 computer labs. Then in the next one, they will move to the next one. That's the project on computer lab. If we're talking about the refurbishment of those computer labs, some of them were very old, they had very old computers. But when they were identified as part of the Dinalede school, we had to go back and make sure that we renew the equipment, renew the servers, and all the connectivity at the center. The next project that we dealt with was the Community Access Center. It was called the Telecenter. Those are the centers that are set up at the community. This could be a standalone center, or it could be at the centers that are called Tucson Service Center, where you've got your key government services provided to those remote communities. USASA would then set up a computer center within that center for community to access. The next project was the under-service area licensee, it was called USA. Those are the small operators that were licensed in 2001. The idea was they should be rolling out infrastructure in those identified under-service areas. USASA then entered into an agreement with those small operators to say, we will pay you subsidies of 15 million over a period of 3 years. It means in each year you will receive a 5 million subsidy, and you have to report the way to tell them to what they should be reporting on before they get a second chance. That's one of the projects that we will fund in the previous year. There were two of those users who received funding. One of them is Amatole, which is based in the Amatole district in the Eastern Cape. And the second one was Kingdom Communication which is based in Zululand in KZN. The other users, like Bukone Telecom, was also funded from the previous agreement, and they completed their subsidies of 15 million. Although up to now they haven't yet formally operated the network. There were seven users that were licensed under phase one. Those are the users that entered into agreement with for that 15 million. There is other users that have been recently licensed. Because of the experiences that we had with the first user, we could not enter into any form of an agreement with the new user, looking at the experiences and the lessons that we have learned. We will probably share more information on the users because it's one of the projects that is still emerging. There's still some discussions as to how do we close that project. Because those entities receive license for 25 years. If we enter into an era of re-licensing, what shape are they going to take? Are they still relevant or are they still not relevant? Those are the discussions that we will be doing currently. One of the projects, sir, if I may, was the training. The Act allows us, if there is a computer center out there, especially in the underserved area, for instructors to be able to assist the people who are operating those centers, to get capacity on how to run those centers, and train them on operating the ICT equipment. You start training 100 personnel from 50 centers. There were four kinds of training programs. One of them was the business skills program. One of them was the computer skills. The third one was the technical computer skill. They were doing an A+. And the fourth area was to assist them if they want to focus on training communities at those centers. They need to be accredited. We had to train them on how do you get accredited, what kind of information do you gather, and what is the process. There's also a project that we have on the FET colleges. There's 18 FET colleges that we are funding, each getting 150,000. Those FET colleges were identified because they were focusing more on ICT training, providing ICDL training to the learners. USASA offered to pay subsidies for all connectivity-related projects at those centers. One of the projects that we're trying to review is the connectivity project. The challenge on this one is that there's many initiatives on connectivity, especially in schools. Previously, USASA created this computer lab and got centers to connect all those schools on this edge. The challenge on that one is that as USASA, it's difficult to get the E-rate. Because we enter directly into a relationship with the service provider. We are trying to review that project so that either the Department of Education or the schools themselves enter into a direct relationship with the service provider so that they qualify for the E-rate. Then the staff can come in to assist, especially those schools that cannot pay even the 50% that is discounted. The staff can assist in that. There was a project that was giving obligations to the operators, the treaty obligations, that if the operators connect schools, then they can give schools the E-rate. You start a made an offer that if you connect those schools, give us a list of the schools, then we will assist those schools to pay the E-rate amount. IDES was one of the operators who came to us to say, these are the schools that were connected, can you assist them? We've been paying those subsidies to those schools. Some of the operators, we tried to get the list from them. We never managed to get the final list as to which school have they connected so that we can take the subsidies. So if I may, I will stop and go, not unless there are some more questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to take you through quickly our strategy going forward. I'll highlight some of the important things. I think a lot of the challenges that Winile spoke about was you start out trying to do everything on its own, being an implementing agency. And we've realized that we can't be the implementer. The Act never intended for us to actually go out and put in the Active Centre. The Act intended for the organization to subsidize the Active Centre. So we're moving from the legacy focus of being the implementer to being a leader and a facilitator. So now we're putting it out to tender, we're doing competitive tenders, we're looking for smart and viable partnerships. We're looking at the life cycle of the centers that there is ongoing support for those facilities. So if a computer breaks or if a line goes down, it's not up to you counselor now to plug along and try to project manage every single center. That we have that built in, that support is built into these partnership models. We're moving from talking to our partners to working with partners as a network organization. And in that way, I think we'll be able to do a lot more. We're moving away from doing the project to managing the project through a project management organization in collaboration. And we're moving away from not spending all our available funds to focus spending on infrastructure implementation, monitoring progress through research projects, and e-literacy, supporting the socio-economic development drivers. And we've already turned around that trend of not spending and we're going to stumble last year for deficit, not this last financial year, but the previous one. But I think that also helps the Department of Communications and National Treasury to see that we actually needed a lot more funding than we were being given. This slide effectively captures our whole strategic vision. I'm not sure if it's clear on the screen. But starting in the middle circle, it shows that the role that USASA wants to play in leadership on universal service and universal access, strategy and policy, giving advice to the minister and giving advice to ICASA, which we've already started to do now with the definition. We've given guidance to both the minister and ICASA, and it's now up to them to come up with the policy directives or the regulations. But we've done the whole consultative process, we've consulted widely, we've discussed with all the stakeholders, and we've put it together in a proper document, our recommendations. The issue that I mentioned right at the beginning, which the committee has already spearheaded, the issue around affordability and the cost of communication. There's a role for USASA to play there as well, in driving affordability. Obviously, we don't have clout that the committee has, but we can look at innovations, new technologies that can bring down the cost of communication. Ensuring infrastructure rollout. We've not had money to do this in the past. Infrastructure is extremely expensive. But now there's 400 million coming into the fund for subsidies, the set-top boxes, and we hope that we've now unlocked the Universal Service and Access Fund. Those 0.2% that we've been collecting from the operators, it's in the National Treasury coffers. It's not been ring-fenced, but they have been keeping a record of how much has been collected. So that money is now starting to be unlocked for subsidies. And then these are some of our partners, CETA, the ICT public sector, the private sector, education, public service and administration, ICASA, and obviously we report to the DOC, they are shareholders, and they provide us with the policy direction. Our key strategic responsibilities then is establishing infrastructure in those areas where the operators are not motivated to roll out, where they cannot make profit. Those are the areas we focus on. Ensuring affordability, either through subsidies or policy lobbying, driving effective usage and uptake, including e-literacy, safety, design of access, especially for people who are differently abled, the issues of access, accessibility, and usage in our centers. It's comes up again and again, and it's something we're looking at making sure that we implement effectively. Networking with our ICT partners and the sustainability. And going forward, our plan project is identifying the underserved area. We have, well, the recommendation has been made to the CASA. It's up to them now to give us the list of the underserved areas, but we've recommended the definition of what is an underserved area. After that, we'll be able to quantify the access gaps. Where are the gaps in the country? And subsidize infrastructure rollout to meet those gaps. We'll be able to cost it as well, which is something that's not happened in South Africa. What is the cost of the digital divide? We want to subsidize the infrastructure rollout, build viable partnership models for more community access centers. Not every household is going to afford an internet broadband connection, but at least there must be a community center nearby where you can access your emails if you're an SME or use the internet for whatever you need to do. And we will carry on subsidizing the cyber lab in the schools together with the Department of Education. And we will continue subsidizing connectivity in the SEC colleges because we think it's very important. Some of our achievements, we've completed the definition project, we've completed our corporate strategy, we had budget increases for capacity improvements and for universal service and access funds projects. We have put in 2,720 computers in schools in the last financial year. We've reached 40,000 learners and 700 teachers. We've connected 18 SET colleges and we will subsidize them annually. We have put in eight new computer centers in the Tucson Center, the former ACCC. And what's not on the list there is we've spent over $150 million on refurbishing those community access centers over the last couple of years. And then in conclusion, we don't want to be negative. We want to call our challenges opportunities for interventions and solutions. So our opportunities, well, raised the one issue that came out of the methods of emphasis, which we've been upfront with you about, where were the shortcomings in USASA. We've identified it, the DOC is holding us to task as the board on what do we do to solve the procurement problem that we have in USASA. We're looking at really beefing up that capacity internally so that we don't have those same methods of emphasis again in this financial year. And as we're improving our skill sets, we've gone involved in a consultative restructuring process. So we should be able to, at the beginning of the next financial year, when our new budget kicks in, we should be able to start filling in or populating our new structure that's going to implement our strategy. We're looking forward to having an efficient fund management system after we've set up all the USAF fund manual system and procedures. And the set-top boxes, the $400 million that's coming into the fund next year, for the set-top boxes, we see it as an opportunity for broadband access. There's a lot of discussions about the specifications of the set-top boxes, but it's something that we've already raised with the Minister and the DOC, and we really, really will push hard to ensure that those set-top boxes can access the internet, can have broadband access. Because that's going to be phenomenal for universal service and access. If every television set can become a channel for access in the internet. Thank you, honorable members, chairperson. We appreciate the opportunity and invitation.
Thank you very much. If we close down the status quo, I know that we will say 33 million. Who will say it? Who will let you? Other than your family. What will change? Because I think we have to, it's a question we've also put to the minister. You know, we've got so many of these entities. Small entities. This morning we had the NISA, 30 million rand budget. We're doing good work. like that we've got about 10, I think,
in 100 years.
And we really want him to know, I mean, apart from the fact that we've covered in law and the Tata must be there, the legal requirements, etc. But what is this organization actually? No, it's not, I'm sure the others will have other questions.
Yes, thank you, dear person. A follow-up on what you said just now. I don't know what the correct English word is, but, you know, if we listen to all the entities underneath the DOC, you know, it's like the one is doing the other one's job and then the other one is not doing that, then we can't do this and you understand what I mean? So interconnected, and you're working together with ICASA. Aren't you trying to do ICASA's job, or ICASA trying to do your job? And that's not very clear. We talked about this morning about interconnectivity. Syntec didn't use the 500 million, the treasury gave them to the Wi-Fi connection. Is that the correct word they used this morning? And they didn't unroll the process. So you can actually connect the learners of South Africa where there is connectivity. But then you have to wait for Syntec to do this, and you have to wait for your ICASA to regulate before you can do anything. You're actually a dead horse without the support of all the other entities. And you are hindered by a lot of things. And then I also want to ask, who are the operators or the service providers you are regulating? Can't ICASA or Syntec do the same job that you are doing? Just to fill in that picture, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is quite similar to Ms. and Nikki, but my understanding is that it's actually international best practice for the universal service function to be located within the regulator. In your view, are there any advantages to SASA being a separate entity, or are you of the opinion, which has been clearly expressed here, that it can either be dissolved or absorbed into your customer, and if so, why?
SASA is at a distinct disadvantage that because the committee has not visited our facility. And that's partly in answering the question of who will miss us. What will be the right way to invite the committee to visit the facilities of SASA in the underserved areas? We have facilities in all the different provinces, in schools and then in community access centers. Also, youth centers in the Tucson centers, which are in the really underserved area. We'll pop up a letter tomorrow to the committee, inviting the committee to please come and visit the centers. Because I think once you go out there and you see what you're doing in the rural areas, then you'll understand who will miss us. For example, in East London, outside of East London, there's a school that I visited, or computer center. There's a community center where there's more than 500 young underserved youth who are getting ICT training, computer literacy training. And there's another waiting list of more than 1,000. For really small amount of money, I think it's about 100 rand for a computer literacy course. Then you go into another school, deep rural school, where there's a USASA computer center, and the kids are getting computer CAT, I think it's called Computer Applied Technology, as a matric subject, right, after matric, which would not have been possible if the ICASA center was not there. It's a drop in the ocean of what the organization needs to do in the country, but the little that we have managed to do with the limited budget is making a difference in the lives of people in that small community. So I think those are the people that will miss ICASA if his office not there. In the DOC stable, we were told by the DG that all the other agencies have had their budgets cut, but the minister refused to cut his office budget. In fact, we've been getting that budget increase because there is a renewed understanding that the work of his office, the role of his office, is a lot more important. It's important. So there is a recognition that there needs to be a lot more done to roll out access to ICT, to improve infrastructure, to get facilities out of communities where people are stuck in the second economy and won't move. They won't be able to apply for jobs, they won't be able to access emergency services if there's no infrastructure and connectivity. So that is the role that Kisata is playing, Chair, with respect. I think that those will be the people who will miss Kisata. There is a role for Kisata because no one else is going to do it. And whatever you call us and wherever you put us, the role should not disappear. Whether we are within the regulator or whether we become a department in the DOC, but somebody needs to do it. The private sector will not do it. It needs a subsidy. There are areas, and Phineas might be able to explain it a lot better, where the market fails, where operators cannot go and roll out a service or infrastructure because they will never see a return on their investment. And that's why government has to put money in there, like they've done with HDIs. And areas like Kupa are now reaping the investment, reaping the benefits of a government investment in infrastructure to make that area conducive for growth and development. And I think there's global statistics that show increase in connectivity leads to an increase in GDP growth, an increase in telephony, an increase in internet connectivity, and even an increase in broadband. The new World Bank statistics that show that for an increase in broadband, there's a certain percentage growth in the GDP. So these are the issues, the policy issues, but on a practical level, this is what Kisata has been doing. Definitely we can do a lot more, and the organization is not being completely effective, limping along with less capacity, but we have been heard by government, by the department, and the treasury. And the new budget are reflective of the new capacity that they want you start to operate at. I hope we answered that question of who will miss us. What are we actually doing?
I totally can answer the question. Maybe you talk about our car. I don't want you to feel defensive. I think I don't want a theoretical answer. Theoretically, I can understand why there should be a structure such as this. All the and the law has made provision for it. My question is, if you look at all the recent research that all the academics have been doing, we, in terms of ICT, whatever it is, all the work, broadband, bandwidth, I mean, all the rollout, all the, we are actually slipping at the time, in terms of performance. Now, I'm not getting the right word at the moment. In fact, we've gone back in the last 5 years, compared to many other developers. For the institution. We're funding, might be limited funding, but we're funding the institution. So if we're not making an impact, if we can't even roll our ratings as we are, as we were, then we've got to ask the question, why are we funding this institution? Everybody will tell us the importance of having a regulated authority. But today it's no longer a secret that structure has just not performed up to scratch. And we've got to ask ourselves here in the sitting in Parliament, because we are proving this time. And if we close now the classes tomorrow, who will miss it? Because we've only had a listening of complaints and complaints and complaints. I haven't found one person from the industry or anywhere. They said a positive word about what is happening. So if you shut it down tomorrow, maybe there'll be tears. That doesn't mean we don't need a regulator. Of course we need a regulator. Now, same way, we need your structure. We need a structure system. But what is the impact of your work? we've got a CFO who is now left. You haven't told us what that thing with the team. I take it suspended or something has happened. I think you sent the last thing, because I also wanted to understand what you're doing. But I haven't seen anything change. In the last 18 months, I'm new to this from the old center, but in the last 18 months, I haven't seen anything change. What you told me then, when you came with the blue and your the purple and your report, nothing has changed. Maybe there's been an improvement a little here and there, and picked up a few centers, but nothing has changed here, bigger than that. So what does the staff mean? Just what are people doing every day when they go to work? I'd like to know. What's your status today? 50 times 200?
30.
30. 30. 35. What did I do? I don't
know how to answer. So, for one, we haven't answered all the questions, but let them come. I think
more than
the
session,
rather than kind of
the question.
That is a good one.
I'm sure the first one you covered is the first that. My only challenge about the CEO is that the current one, or current or not current, I'm not sure whether it can or go because of the challenges which is undergoing. What becomes the possibility of filling that post, whether the person is busy with other processes. Whatever processes, I'm not sure what is the case now. Resulting from that sexual harassment case which was made against him also. Now, allegedly, it's not been proven, but I hope you fired him if you prove it yourself. It might not be proven somewhere else. But that case, where is it now, and so on, what become the critical thing to me, not the subject case, but the positive opinion, the positive in terms of that particular difficulty and so on. But the other thing, what is missing for me, which maybe can take forward some of the issues which you are raising, I think the answer is honest to say it does not seem to matter where to relocate the function. The question is that the function is needed to be performed by who. It might be an issue open for debate and so on, but hey, if you are checking into the regulator, you ask me, it's better stay where it is now and think of some other time where it was here, other issues about the regulator. For now, it won't help to test. It might worsen the situation. But the issue which I wanted to raise is that I thought that you'll be able, as the people who have been tasked with this research, part of your work. You know, on your opening remarks to the chairperson, we have indicated our commitment to millennium development and world information society goals, which we have. But on your report, I can't check as a country. You see, the chair is saying we're speaking as a country, some of this rating. And also in terms of achieving our own goals, which we have undertaken internationally and so on. So on the report, I can't capture where I was. Even on those millennium development goals, where are we exactly as a country in relation to the area of issues which we are focusing on? Are we on par to meet our commitment for 2014, or we won't be able to meet the 2014? What exactly are your area of focus around this particular matter, and what is it you might do in order for us to be able to achieve that? I think that's one area which seems to be missing. Now, we are talking about the 4 million which might come for the set-top office. But the problem is that I'm not sure who are you just the sort of the people which are there to send over the money to other people who are driving the process. I'm raising that because the department is engaging on that process. The possible colloquium coming this week to deal part of that, the statement of the sector office and so what your role is like in terms of that. Your role is the same as other people are dealing with something else, but I'm raising that only because you are saying that will give an opportunity to cross-time access.
your role then becomes key, because if other people are giving the statement somewhere else and you're not part of that, how do you realize that the certificate of that thing and realize what you are talking about in terms of those particular names? But the other people say the disclosure of interest by the board members and also the staff. What is the level of the conflict of interest within that? What measures are in place to do those particular measures so that at least you are able to contain those issues and other related measures? The one thing say we are our staff going to and try to understand. You see, the members need some, but you see, continuously we are talking about your role to define the universal service access and these other affordability and all these other issues. What is our definition of this? I know there is the universal definition, but it's in other countries required to take it to detail in terms of what is our definition of South Africa and what exactly do we intend to do about this particular matter, so that we move away from the generic definition. But I've been picking up that they will refer to the minister to discuss with you. But what is the future of defense as a situation for this thing? Because I think that is one area which has been making to define. But I was pleased to see that you have taken the step further to say you cannot just define it there, but you need to break it out. Because I'm still interested to know that if you talk about this universal access and these other issues, where are we talking about exactly in the country? If you say in Mpumalanga, where in Mpumalanga? If it's in Kanala district, where in Kanala district? If it's in Bombela Mutali, where in Bombela Mutali? If it's World Station, where World Station? So to start to locate exactly where do we need this intervention. So it's also because of what you have raised, that for this hazard intervention, which are all over, someone is intervening besides the other one is doing the other thing. So I thought maybe that if we are not yet on that level in terms of the process, how far we are going to go into that. But I understand the difficulty that you are making subject to maybe the minister and also the CASA and so on in terms of the minister. But I was just interested to understand what exactly is that situation. The last thing is, Musa, where are we going to do? You see, you are better placed in terms of research and making your penetration. Where does this animal itself take us? Is it still necessary? In terms of your research, you are dealing with those issues on daily basis, I suppose. Is it still necessary in the current form, or we need to change it as well? What exactly do we need to do? Because yourself giving the report, it seems that the people were just catching for the money from yourself. But if you go and check what they've done with the money, some of them, there is no prospect of anything going forward except few of them. But I don't want the specific terms of the results, but in terms of your broader understanding, where must we go, or what is your advice to the minister? Is this the relevant policy, or we need to pass from it? If we pass from, where do we go in terms of moving forward to be able to access those particular matters? I think that would be the issue that we just wanted to check. I'm sure they are relevant, we can discuss.
You want to answer now, or you want to take all the comments and receive the comments and questions? What do you want? That was one thing I know there in this case, and you heard something called yourself. Nothing.
unknown
animal. Alright. Can you
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Just apologies, I actually managed to put myself off in the room. Can I just?
I'm hoping
to. Can I just ask? It is, and certainly, what all state institutions at CFO usually develop a sort of a life of its own. Start perpetuating more, a greater staff structure, more expensive offices, operating expenditure usually increases, etc., etc. But then in the end, you have to see if they really want to achieve their goals. The capital expenditure also needs to have CDD stuff. Now I see that it is up from last year, but it's lower than the first year. If we're looking at your Lusaka expenditure trend presentation on the slide. If I could just get an understanding of how that relates to the trend of more expensive offices and increasing staff members, etc., and the outcome of the real mandate responsibilities that you carry. The chairperson earlier referred to, well, said, if the staff was no longer there, how will we feel about it? Okay, we can argue where it is located, etc., but ultimately, we have to differentiate between output and outcome. And that is, once we have trained the young people, what happens to them? Is there a sort of a track that we're following on that? Secondly, I would like to just ask them, again, as Honourable Panabas indicated, different institutions are sort of linking to each other. So it is the CASA, it is the department, etc. Because we have SEC centers, etc., obviously the Department of Higher Education is also a role player in Luka. How do you ensure that your emphasis on connectivity and similar projects in other departments are not working against each other, but actually become part of a bigger plan and an overall project to make sure that government expenditure is spread in the rural areas? Also, Honourable Zondi, that you can know what it is in KZN. Otherwise, if government departments are working in isolation with each other, you often have a situation of almost replicating specific connectivity projects and duplicate. How do you actually manage to make sure that does not happen? Do you have a sort of a coordination structure of some sort? And then lastly, I note a slide on ushering in the winds of change. You indicated that you had budgetary restrictions. I believe your budget will be doubled in the next year, meaning your expenditure framework. Will it improve your ability to advise your CASA? Because I think we all agree that they need a lot of advice. More than double the volume of advice. And your research capacity, what does it entail? And what specifically is your role as far as that is concerned? Do you require more researchers? Do you require a better relationship with ICASA? Do you require a more regular interaction with them? How do we make sure that specific function is performed well, so that we can also see the benefit of that where ICASA is performing very well? Can you also just identify the reasons for unspent money in the budget?
Well, the money that you don't
spend. Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll deal with the issue of the status of the CEO and CFO position and request Phineas to deal with the issue of the international best practice of USAF funds being within the regulator and the interconnection or the question from the Honourable Member on who we are regulating and the operators, who are the operators. And then Phineas can deal with the question of the staff the issue of set-top boxes, the 400 million, and shall we just deal with those and then we can go to the list the next time? On the CFO, we should have had a CFO by now. We almost did. We went through the whole process of advertising, shortlisting, interviewing, and appointing. And unfortunately, the CFO declined the offer because of problems with the government pension funds and not being able to transfer it over to yourself or some exchange like that. So unfortunately, we went to square one and we had to go advertise again, and we lost at least 3 months in that process. So it's really unfortunate, it's bad luck. Also, we're having a severe problem, I think, because of reputational damage in the past, of affecting good, strong leadership into yourself. Both the CFO and the CEO post, we advertised it, and we didn't get sufficient good candidates, so we had to go through the headhunting process. So you lose another whole month in that process. But both with the CEO and the CFO, we're at the stage where we have shortlisted and we're ready to interview. Here again, as with Anita, the DOC has requested to be part of the process. The late minister, the previous minister, also instructed us to ensure that the DOC participates in that in those committees. With the CFO, we have both the DOC and the Treasury sitting in the interview panel because we want a participatory consultative selection panel, but also the person has to work closely with them. So we've gone back to the drawing board with the CFO group. Hopefully before the end of the year we can have a new CFO. On the CEO, the shortlisting has been done and we're just waiting to lock in dates for the interviews, either in October or early November within the DG diary, because she's requested to be on the selection panel. With the case of the previous CEO, he was dismissed for sexual harassment. A senior employee within the organization lodged a grievance of sexual harassment. The board appointed an independent chairperson to conduct the disciplinary inquiry, and he was found guilty, and the recommendation was dismissal. There was a witness, and the board accepted the recommendation of dismissal. So he was dismissed. He applied to the High Court to stop the agency from filling the post, and he lost with cost. So he's also free to fill those positions. He is exercising his rights at the CCMA presently, and hopefully that case will have been concluded by the end of November, because the new the second round, I think it's been postponed and the date is set down for the end of November. But in the meantime, we are going ahead to fill that vacancy. Let me hand over to Sonia to deal with the issues of the UTEP and the regulator.
Okay, thanks. If we turn to Section 89 of the ECA, you will realize that there is a requirement that there's all licensed operators, meaning your mobile operators, your fixed line operator, are required to make to pay 0.2% of their annual turnover into the Industrial Operation Access Fund. That is the fund that is then establishes what we are supposed to manage. Now that fund, the title goes as follows. All operators would pay that money into a CASA's coffers, which in terms of the Act, the CASA Act 1630, the CASA Act then send that money to National Revenue Fund. And then we from our end will gain through parliamentary appropriation the particular kind of money that we are supposed to manage. So that's what we do. But the operators are the ones that every licensed operator has to make that particular 0.2%. Hence, we would have some discussion at some point as to the evolution and the process of how that money then translates into. But that is exactly what it is. ICASA has the one as a regulator that takes it from the license condition. The project. Our role is just to manage. Now, in terms of the best practice, one has to go back to what the Telecom Act had. it established this fund for a period of 5 years, and every 5 years was supposed to then be given a better mandate as to whether it continues or not continues. That was stopped when the ECA came into being, where it was given a more permanent status. My understanding was the idea was you would deal with all the agenda of having a fund of this nature, closing gaps with a particular plan, and afterwards have review the mandate and look at whether it needs to then look at the next point of intervention. That was the approach that I think was the process that it was taking. But internationally, most of the funds that are being created have to look at 3 points, as to availability, accessibility, and affordability as the main driver of what it is that you want to do. And then it has to list areas where you need to look into. And this infrastructure, where people have market failure, you need to take a look into what interventions you have. It looks at those gaps that might be created through which you need to then make an intervention. Therefore, what you're supposed to be looking at as an agency is those particular specific mandates. But it gives us a much more generic approach that we must first of all define what is it that is universal service, what is it that is universal access. And also that we must come back with continuous research on areas of ICT. And gives us another area that we also need to look at is managing the fund in the best way that we will be able to look at the developmental agenda. Other markets, for instance, in Uganda, you will have that they have a separate fund away from the regulator, away from the policymaker, to then deal with the issues of accessibility. In other markets, for instance, in Ghana, where we have that, it is separated from it. Most of the international practice that you remove the fund away from both the regulator and the policymaker. I think what is key is, and the chair spoke about it here, if we were to close down, what is it? Who will miss us? That's a fundamental point. Because the funds must be responsive to an integrated plan, an agenda driven higher than maybe perhaps what we are facing. If I give an example of the Ghanaian example, the Ghanaian example has all operators having at least 5 board sitting. It has also the regulator sitting in the board. It has as well the minister chairing the fund board. And then they then set on the national agenda what is that they want to grow. They use all the money that comes into it because there's an agreement to all those things. It could all be a model that could look into the future. That might have its own way. But the key thrust is the agenda has to be elevated to a point where the role of such a fund responds to. The Korean is another example. South Korea is another example where it is elevated to the point where there is a digital 2020 vision that was set up. And the role of the agency, which is called CADO, was then given clearly for everyone, from education, it was ICT in education intervention. It was a national agenda. It was not something that could come in and only start in the isolation of what is the total strategy on education. It covers from lower primary up to university, and it is a national agenda. Then it comes to the levels of what is it that you want to provide in under service area. They made those areas, as Mr. Colon has indicated, you need to specifically identify the areas you need to make an intervention and you have a plan over how long you then take to close up so that you can cost. These are some of the interventions that we are currently doing, but they need to have them to be elevated and we're quite excited by the new administration at the DOC, which elevates most of these issues that you're talking about. So there is clarity as to the role. There is an agreement on the national agenda where this type of fund must respond to. And when money comes into the fund, there is clearly clarity as to how it will be spent. So that's the best practice that we find is happening. What we have tried with the corporate plan was to highlight some of the issues that we're speaking about. That as long as the agency becomes responsive only to what it has been allocated, what it thinks it can do within its mandate, perhaps we must make a dent that is what we're supposed to be doing. Because we need to elevate this issue to the highest level that we can. And also given the problem that the department that we are currently under does not have a national mandate. So the role of ICT takes different forms in different provincial structures. This is evident in education. This is also evident that also in municipalities, some of the municipalities have their own ICT strategies And when you come in with the instructor, that you need to then align yourself as to where they are at and how do you make an impact. So we really need to then deal with those dynamics that we do not have a national competence in terms of the department that you are under. And therefore, work with drivers maybe that would be a much more integrated approach, which was identified in the ISSIGRF meeting that we need a very composite approach. What each province is doing, which areas are still lacking in infrastructure, then we can all agree on the program of how we respond to it. Then we have to have a costing approach. I'm not sure what covered the developments I think I'm going to do.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of the set-top boxes, Treasury has allocated the amount of $400 million to come into the USA fund over the next 3 years. And the question from the honourable member was what will be the role of the SASA given the statements we made about broadband, and do we just have to hand over the money? There is a document from Donga. There's a lot of questions still at this stage on where the subsidy would kick in. Will it be at the manufacturing level, will it be at the retail level, or a remote possibility, will it be direct to the public? That is a bit of an administrative nightmare to try to manage direct subsidies to the public. Some countries do it through a coupon system, but it's similar to the problems we just worried about the problems that even SASA has with the handing out of social grants. So we don't think that it will be viable. But within the digital zone, there are discussions that are ongoing about how the subsidy works the best and what would be the most effective way to do that subsidy. Our role would be to administer the subsidy through the fund and make sure that it happens properly and well in terms of corporate governance, it's checked properly. The board will still have a role to ensure that it meets the mandate and it follows all the right policy and procedural processes. In terms of broadband, here again, it's not up to USASA to decide on the specifications because the process of the manufacturing sector and the discussions around the manufacturing of the sector boxes and promoting manufacturing within South Africa is a bit beyond our control. It's something that we raised as a concern. We understand the need to promote local manufacturing, but we don't think it should be at the expense of universal service and access. So if it's going to be more expensive to produce it in South Africa, we won't be happy about it. If it means that we have to sacrifice on specifications like access to broadband, we definitely won't be happy about it. So these are issues that we have raised with the DOC, and we are discussing on what would be the best way to go forward on this. Maybe on the issue of the declarations of interest, the board, on every meeting and every subcommittee meeting, has a form that we each have to fill to declare any interest on the agenda or conflict of interest. On the management level, Mile, maybe you could just highlight. Is it monthly or annually that the management has to declare the interest?
On an annual basis, management will declare their interest in the organization. But also at the ESCO level, we do declaration of interest.
At the moment, there are no conflicts of interest. What could be a vague conflict is if you have a representative of the board sitting, who comes from an operator that sits in the board, but appointed by the minister. But if there are any decisions or discussions related to that operator, then we note that and allow the person to be recused from that discussion. But at the moment, there are no material conflicts of any sort that we've picked up. On the usual, where are we going with the usual? The board took a decision not to fund any more underserviced area licenses until the model has been completely reviewed. The process we started even before the Susano policy deficit, which is now being reversed. As USASA, we brought together ICASA and the DOC to look at how we could make the usuals viable, because in the current form, they set up a failure. From a regulatory perspective, from a subsidy perspective, from a competitive perspective, there's no way you can allow or expect the users to go and negotiate the interconnection agreement with big operators and get anywhere fast, because they don't. And if the operator just refuses to allow them interconnection, then they can't even get off the starting point. But the issue of the usual, the fact that in the new license regime, they're not really catered for, they're just a normal ECNS license or ECS license. These are issues that need to be discussed. And if the usuals are going to be viable, then it needs, we really need a new model for them. Until then, we cannot keep throwing good money out of there on the usuals. This board is not popular. If we go to any forum where there are usuals in the room, we're attacked like we are the worst enemy. But unfortunately, 50 million is a thumbs-up figure that came out of who knows where. It doesn't even allow the usuals to get the first phase of infrastructure out. So the new round of licenses that have been issued, and they're expecting yourself to give them 15 million. One, we don't have the budget. And two, we cannot in any good faith say that we have to give them 15 million and it's going to result in any connectivity for the poor. Because of the 11 users that we gave subsidies to, only three have any form of infrastructure, and I think only one is providing any form of services. And even those are not in an underserved area. It's Amatole and then East London. So on the usuals, we've raised it again now with the DOC. There needs to be a thoroughgoing review of that whole usuals process. Or even if they're still viable as a means to provide connectivity in underserved areas. They need to be really protected and babysat to make any dent in underserved areas. It's an area that not even profitable companies can make an intervention. Now, how do you expect SMEs with no resources to go and do better? It's unrealistic. And we've said so both to the DOC. I'll allow Linda to talk through the expenditure trends, and then perhaps we can talk about the research and then the duplication, perhaps with role play. I think that would have covered role play.
Chair and honourable members, I think the question that was asked related to CAPEX, why is it that we're not investing as much as we should in our CAPEX? If you notice in the sheet, the data expenditure change, you note that CAPEX in 2007-08 was 1.9 million, then the next year it dropped to 48, and the current year is about 971. The reason for that, in 2008, we moved offices. USAPA is not a capital intensive business. The CAPEX that we have relates to furniture, computers, and office equipment. And during that year, we moved offices, so a lot of that went into furniture and accounts. In the prior year, that is now 2008-09, we struggled to fit everything within our budget because we allocated only 33 million. Though we know now that we should invest in trying to improve our systems and all of that, our budget wouldn't allow us. And in the current year, we have put aside 971,000, and most of that will go to investigating an ERP system that we plan to introduce so as to be able to manage our budget that is increasing substantially starting from next year. If you look now at the previous page where it shows the standard budget allocation, you will note now that we're getting almost twice as much in our budget, that is now 64.9 million. That's where we plan to invest seriously in our cases.
Okay. One of the questions I wanted to give was, which is a very fundamental question saying, what is the stuff of this property if we don't see anything? There are two areas one needs to look at. The first one is the way Mustafa has been operating before, where we took a role of going out there and implementing projects ourselves. And also looking at the skill set that is present within itself. Those two areas might create a situation where we don't really see what is the work that the staff is doing. We're dealing with 9 provinces. We don't have offices in all those provinces. Most of the time we find out because of the way the staff has been operating, the staff has to physically go to those provinces and meet with the stakeholders and the service providers. If one looks at the current plan of the staff, where we want to implement a process where we're going to be more paying subsidies than actually implementing, one will see the visibility of that staff much more prominent on projects themselves, rather than, say, we brought out 8 telecenters, then one may compare that we've got 38 staff members, and how many did complete one after center. But if this is the way we've been operating, that creates a situation where we don't see much change. If one looks at the new corporate plan, it's emphasizing that, firstly, USASA should have the goal, the target for the whole nation. It's saying by 2020, this is where we want to see USASA. Then you work backwards, you say, this is what we will do to ensure that by 2020 we will be there. Also, linking to the MDGs, there is part that we are clearly identifying that by 2014, this is what we will have achieved on the universal service and access. If I may, I just wanted to touch briefly on the definitions of universal service and access. There was a question saying, what exactly is our definition of universal service and access? One note previously, the definition was based on a district basis, which is the area, and also the package of services, which was looking at the 6-9 telephone. The new proposal that we submitted to the minister, we're looking at an area up to a municipality level, where possible even going to the ward level. But we also identified which services that should be there for us to be able to say this area is not under service. We may share that definition document through the consultation with the ministry, but this one I think it goes much more in detail where you can say this is exactly where the underserved area is. Thank you.
Chair, on the issue of the role players and whether we duplicating and should we have a coordinating structure, the DLC should be our coordinating structure. We have different agencies within the sector that should be working together and should be standing together, and we should have an integrated strategy. We have raised this with the minister and the new DG, and it's something that they're looking at. We identified that there are some areas of duplication and possibly even competition. You know, we're all competing for limited budgets, so we will compete. We shouldn't be competing. We should be supplementing each other, and it needs to be more better, well coordinated. On the issue of the research advice, everything that we do as USASA needs to be informed by research, and at the moment there's very little proper and updated research that we get to work from to make informed decisions. We are signing an MOU with TESSA to ensure that ICT indicators are included in the next census, which is in 2011. And also get included into the community surveys and the household surveys and there's an industry survey. That would be able to track to a much greater degree and depth of what are the changes. Are we really slipping? If we're saying we're doing phenomenally well with mobile, what does it really mean? If you have 3 cell phones in your pocket and they're all activated, that doesn't mean 3 people have access to cell phones. You know, those types of things that we need to clear up so we can get a good sense of exactly what our status in the country. at the moment there's a lot of guessing going on with access to broadband, access to internet, access to telephone, to voice and to data and mobile. So on the research, that's the one area of what the research capacity means. But also, for example, with the use of what's going on in the world, if we have more research capacity, we'll be able to see how do other countries deal with the issue of underserved areas. Why does the United States decide to have two funds, one for universal service and access and one for broadband? Why is the EU also looking into having a new broadband fund? What is their motivation and, you know, what are their targets? So there's a lot we can learn from research, especially in Africa. Sunil mentioned Uganda, Ghana. There's a lot going on in universal service and access. And their researchers are having a lot more success with different models. So we need to have more research capacity so we can learn from that. Okay, I think we've covered a lot of questions. I'm sure there'll be more on the right.
Many more questions. I know you've remembered. Velma, Reverend Zondi, Kelly, Danga, Judy. They're not going to go in tonight. Fair enough.
Thanks, Jason. I just wanted to add to what the Honourable Eric said about definitions. I'd like to know, when you did the definitions, did you involve the public as well, civil servants as well, GPOs, disabled people organizations, were they involved in the definitions? How did you arrive, and what stakeholders were involved in arriving with that definition? My understanding maybe of universal access and services might be different to your understanding. So I'd like to know what the consultative process, that would be what I'd like to know. And also the document that you're talking about, is there a document that's suitable to this committee as well? So I'd like to see, you know, how you arrive at those definitions. And then secondly, the act that says that you need to see to broadcasting services. I see you talk about mobile and computers and so forth, but you're not mentioning anything about broadcasting. So what do you do, what is your role regarding broadcasting to make broadcasting accessible to all? Because I see you focus a lot on telecommunications. And then your draft here regarding stock. I can't see whether you are on 50-50 gender equity, where are you on that? Can you just explain that too, whether you have staff who are disabled as well? Can you give us a breakdown of that as well? Then you also I spoke about computers in schools, 2,720 schools. I'd like to know these schools, children with disabilities, schools for disabled, children at those schools have been targeted, because I know that many schools for disabled children do not have access to computers, and I'd like to know whether you target those schools as well. Thank you.
If Phineas can respond to the definitions and the stakeholders and the issue of the broadcasting, and we will talk about the staff, gender, disability breakdown, and the schools.
Thank you, Chair. In relation to the definitions project, yes, it was consultative. The process was we published the first initial draft, upon which we received comments from operators, civil society, and we also through SANDONET used that particular database. We also had responses from BlindSA and FSA. Those are some of the stakeholders that we had making submissions, which are publicly available, and we can make them available to the committee. Then on the committee that was seeking to consolidate the thoughts that have been put across, we had the ICASA representatives as well as the GOC and the media and diversity agencies sitting to then sit through those particular submissions. We then had a public hearing also that was recorded, and those are available for consideration by members, honorable members. And then the definitions, ultimate documentation is sitting before ICASA and the ministry, and I'm sure through the process it could be something that could be facilitated that you obtain copies on the thinking and the rationale. to put through. There were issues specific to the accessibility in relation to some of the different forms of disability, and we were given the ITU regulation relating thereto, and there's been debate in our last deliberation to the DOC to further investigate areas that we might have missed, in particular to people with disabilities. That's an area that we took a look at and that there's been discussion. But I'm sure through the board we could be able to share some of the information for your consideration and maybe comment, because we want to be consultative as possible. Relating to the broadcasting issue, on reading of the Act, the role of ICASA is on a wider approach, it indicates that broadcasting can make intervention there too in relation to infrastructure. That's an area we have raised with the DOC that we need clarity more, because if you read the ECA, the intention was to make a converged environment. But when you in closer reading thereof, you then realize the two industries are still almost separate, and it does not talk to 100% convergence. There are certain issues relating to the convergence in actual fact and the practice that is out there. So our role has not been that prominent in broadcasting in relation to infrastructure per se. And that is also because the broadcasters currently, they make their contribution to the Media and Development Diversity Agency, and upon which, if they've made that, the Act allows them to have a set-off against the fund. That's an area that is covered in the Section 89 regulations, which are coming to effect on the 1st of April next year. So it is just that we need to recognize that they've made a contribution, and their contributions in terms of the MDDA, they are able to utilize the fund 100% from making a contribution to the other members, and which is not something that is obtainable within the fund itself. And most of the broadcasters believe that if they make a contribution to MDDA, they are able to access their money. In relation to interventions for people with disability in terms of license conditions, there are universal service obligations that are put for the current operators, particularly those who have access to 1800 spectrum, that they must put access centers within areas of within schools of people with disabilities. That aspect of universal service has not taken greater shape because of the challenges that we talked about operators being unable to fulfill this area of universal service obligation. ICASA has, through advice that is given after assessing the obligations, will be reviewing the obligations so that we can then have a lockdown area and make sure that they are being used, because there are problems on some of the universal service obligations being met. Some of them are mostly through the Department of Education in allocating the schools. In some instances, there's no specific elements within the universal service obligations to then say, if you then participate in any particular school, what sort of minimum standards should you put in place? These are the issues that have been raised with ICASA, and there is a steering committee that is dealing with this with ICASA, the Department of Education, as a beneficiary to help and assist us in this particular area. Thank you, Chair. There was a question on the breakdown of the disabled people currently at the Chair, if I may, currently, with the current staff complement, out of 39, there is one person with disability. However, during the process of restructuring that we are back on, we are working on a specific target, not only on people with disability, but also with all other diversities that we need to accommodate at all levels, including at the executive level. As we approve the new structure, then those targets will be built in. The second area, Chair, is whether we have centers that are targeting the kids with disabilities. We've got quite a few centers that are at schools with kids with disabilities. We've got one in Huambe in the Bizana area. We do have a center there. There is another center near Sakara in the Eastern Cape.
at the school with the kids with disabilities. There is another one in Cape Town. Also, in yes, there's also one in Cape Town. Even within the community, we do have centers of people with disabilities. We've got one in Tembisa, in Gauteng. There are a few other ones in the Western Cape. What we need to be working on, because most of those centers, there was not strong collaboration with the organization that deal with people with disabilities. Especially when working with ICT, you get different forms of disability. Now we need to look at the specifics of the equipment and perhaps the software that can affect different people with different disabilities. But we will work that into our program going forward. Thank you.
In the page, we attack the Ashari Union for Change. There is a statement made there, an intention to attract that opportunity with staff to be trained and risk skill assisting staff. Now, in the current skill set existing in Mustafa, what sort of skills are we talking about here? Are we talking about engineer? What sort of skills are we talking about? Secondly, you also say that the budget constrains the sector from attracting the kind of skills people who could produce SASA on an appropriate footing. Now, do this sort of skills exist in a pool somewhere? Where are you going to source these skills from? Are they in the private sector? That sort of thing. And the second question is, what is the future of the Ligat project? How long does the SASA need to remain involved within the Ligat project? Can they survive without the SASA in some distant future?
There are two issues that I wanted to get clarity. To be quite honest, sometimes when we talk about this fund, and when it has come and make their presentation that they need more funding because they collect this billion of rand, you might not tell the link between USASA and the fund. You might think that ICASA is collecting something else, or something else we could say to the fund. But look, the issues I just want to check, we've been told that there are billions which are sitting there to this fund, and then the fund was sort of being reinvested to deal with this in that. But now, I'm not sure what presenting would indicate to say the fund is collected by the CASA to National Treasury, but not the reinvested. That's the issue here, not the reinvested. For this purpose. Now, do we know how much is there? At the current agency, how much do we have here? I'll tell you why, because I'm sure in ourselves we've created an expectation in terms of dealing whether it's your e-rate, dealing with the areas where there's no coverage for TV, coming to the World Cup, thinking that, you know, it's part of access, universal service fund, you can tap into that. for people to, you know, a lot of things have been created. I'm sure even the issue of the hearing is part of the problem that maybe he hopes is education things that there's a lot of beyond this which you can tap and handle that particular matter and so on. But this maybe can be clarified whether to, you know, how much is there. Is this thing of the fund not being reinvested? What does it mean? Because you see, this is the fund we should be philosophically to improve the issue of ICT. Nothing else. I'm sure the state has got other means of collecting revenue other than this. But I would like to start to get to address what that's supposed to mean around the particular matter. But the other matter linked to that, you see, I think it's part of the issues of the legacy of the past. Because you see, the issue of I read the matter of Millennium Development Goals, which has been touching passing. The issue which I was trying to check whether what is at this commitment and where are we as part of your long term project in terms of meeting, but they want the response to say one, two projects. Maybe part of the problem is that whether to hear the national policy, but part of the issues which are coming up now is that we seem to be, maybe I might put it wrong, but it will seem there is no leading department in the ICT in the country. The DOC, which we think is the leading ICT department in my notes, in terms of practical, what is happening on the council, government, municipality, your infrastructure, CTSA, your infrastructure, your city in somewhere in another department and so on. So it's time that we wake up to our sleep, what we normally think that was the leading ICT department, but it will seem it's not. And I'm sure you have come up with that particular matter, part of your response, you know, part of the problem we have to specifically have to adapt your strategy and so on. But when you go to this municipality, because they are on setup, which might not be talking to what we are trying to do. Department of Education, but they are only thinking in progress in terms of what you need to do and so on. Maybe if I can just clarify on that, but the most interested one, this money is collected and being returned, which is, and how much is it? Do you see that billions or what you're talking about, a few months or few thousand, which are think are billions, which are sitting, I thought by now to be trillions. The way of collecting it should be trillions by now, what is talking about billions? There's something wrong with that fund, those policies and so on. Thank you.
Targets that were set.
Then I'm a little concerned, because in some cases you have said, not achieved. In other cases, we set the goal, and then the goal was not quite met, but then the heading says achieved. Now, I'm just going to mention a few. There's one, the very first one, that 80% of target was achieved, that's fine. Then I'll give you a correction mark for 2 and 3 on page 27. The top one, that's fine, I'll give you a correction mark, but the target where you set internet connectivity for 733 centers, your response there was IBIS is the only operator that was paid. And they submitted all the required documents. Is that therefore the only one that is performing in all of the 743 centers? Okay, then the next page, at the top, page 28, you indicated that it was achieved. Review of quarterly reports submitted by the FEC. But their actual performance is that quarterly once-off reports were received from subsidized FEC. Can you then say it was achieved? I would argue no. If it's not quarterly reports that are being received, then you cannot say it's a target that was achieved. Then the next two, you said you didn't achieve. Target achieved on the on the 15 access centers and the 15 schools. But if we look at the third one at that top bracket, it says final report submitted to EXCO. And then we said actual performance reports on kiosk deployments were received upon completion of the site, and 90 pilot reports were received after installation. Question is, it was actually meant to be evaluation of the usage. If you look at the monitor and evaluate usage of the technology, it's not really only the report that was the issue. So I'm just working through this, and then I'm saying, if we really critically analyze this checklist, then we're saying there are 17 items, and I'm not too strict, then I would fault you on 10 of the 17 items. Only 6 are achieved, really, pull out, and 1 is a question mark. I believe that this is an important instrument. Don't read me wrong. I also don't want to be negative in criticism, but if we say we're going to evaluate performance on a specific issue in terms of a quantifiable outcome, then we must really say that we did we achieve it in the end. Because some of the issues are critical. Also here at the top of page 31, it says established goals, objectives, sometimes indicators and monitoring tools, final reporting, monitoring and evaluation framework to be completed, milestones, actual performance, you say the framework is encapsulated in the draft submission paper and it will be sent as part of regulation to the student. Question is when? It can be here say to T, I would argue no, not a T. So I believe that those that need very clear monitoring to ensure real performance outcomes. And don't be too soft on yourself. I think real performance needs oneself to be highly critical. You know, to say that we think we're almost there, but we haven't made it. So that's just my way of sort of comment on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and honourable members. I would absolutely agree. We're not even almost there yet. We're only going to start getting there next year. And I think the going into detail of the report is a good indication of the skills and capacity that we have for managing our projects, but also for monitoring and evaluation. At the moment, it's very, very thin in New South Wales. And that's an area that we really need to beef up on monitoring and evaluation. If we say we want to monitor the usage in the Mindset project, we haven't been able to do it because we don't have the capacity. So we're not saying,
Chair, there were no miracles in the last financial year. There haven't been any miracles in this financial year, and there won't be miracles next financial year. The next financial year, come April, we will get the new budget, and we will be able to start doing what we need to start doing. But until now, we have not been able to do that. We have been limping along with limited resources, limited capacity, but tons of enthusiasm and a lot of hard work and strength. So we're not going to be demoralized by the negative comments of this committee, because we really have been trying hard. We've been working really hard on getting our strategy in place and getting the plans in place. But definitely, nothing's changed yet, Chair. Hopefully it will change next year. The MCE has 60 years to effect change. So there were no miracles, but we're really hoping that we've done the groundwork and the homework to implement the changes from when we get the money to do it. No money, no delivery. We didn't have money, we were struggling. And you're absolutely right, it's indefensible. We can't make excuses for the level of delivery and the lack of proper program management that we have. Going on to the gender equity question, in the presentation we said that we have 40% women in the organization currently, and at the senior level we only have 25%. We have 3 vacancies, and we want to make sure that in those vacancies we solve the gender equity at the senior management level. And in the next structure, the new structure, we definitely want to meet our gender and disability target. On the issue of the current skill sets needed and what sets, we are very heavy on our support services. So we have a lot of people in HR, a lot of people in administration, and a lot of drivers, messengers, and cleaners. But we don't have people to help us on the ground in the rural areas with the project. So the core business, we understand. And we near any team of not even a third of the organization are on the operations. They are really struggling. So we need skills in research. We need skills in broadcasting. We need new skills in project management, in monitoring and evaluation. We need new skills in fund management. And we need new skills in understanding all the different technologies. To evaluate business cases, when we get proposals, we need clever people within new startups to say, are they messing us around? Are they talking sense? Is this viable or possible? So those are the skills that we've now brought into our new structure that we will be implementing next year with our budget system. We need to talk about the future of the legacy project and the sustainability. Before that, maybe I can deal with the USAF funds and how much is there. We stand to be corrected, but at the end of the last financial year, there was about 800 million collected to date from the operator since 1997. Of that, about 400 million had been allocated to USAF since 1997. So there was about 400 million left, but that excluded the levy that from the operators last year, which would have been about 250 million. So the outstanding money in the fund was about 650 million. So 400 million of that is coming into the fund for tech support. We are reviewing what the universal service obligation should be, together with the council and the DOC. And looking at what's the best practice globally on the fund contribution, and whether we should review the 0.2%. The Act allows us to go up to 1% of revenue. So if you look at if we're collecting on average about 250 million per annum times 5, that will give us a billion per annum. So that's the best case scenario of increasing the 0.2% to 1%. Those issues are under discussion, and it is a policy discussion. So if we need to talk about the sustainability of the legacy project, on the MDGs, perhaps, I'm not sure if Renee or Phineas can deal with that, if there is policy. And the cyber lab, the handover to the municipalities, and was advised, do we have insurance, is it safe? and then I think I dealt with the issues of the reporting on the new tax.
Thank you, sir. On the future of the legacy project, one of the weaknesses that were identified in those projects, one is the ownership model. Most of them, they're not surviving because there's no proper owner who takes ownership. If your computer is not switching on, at least somebody can go to the plug and check if it's plugged to the wall. Currently, the mentality is that this is the user's computer. If it doesn't switch on, then I leave it there, then I go home. That's one of the weaknesses in those projects. Some of them will complain that internet has not been working for the past 4 years. You make one call to center, they say, go there, switch on, is this light coming on? You sort it out within 30 minutes. But because there's not that ownership that I want this thing to work, then they just leave it. That's one of the areas we want to address. In some areas, it's the issue of the design model of the center. You need to look at, in this area, what are the core services that they need. Then you make sure those core services will always be available. That's the project that we will embark on in this current financial year. We call it a handover project. We sought a service provider that will physically go to this center, interview these people, look at their business plan that is talking to what they want to do. Can they manage that business plan? And at the end, we're looking at entering into a formal contract to say, as a person who's operating this center, this is what we're expecting from you, and this is what we can assist you. Those are the gaps that we're trying to close. The reality is that some of the centers that were deployed many years ago, you may find that around them, they are surrounded by new access projects, like your Vodafone container. Some of them do have computers, and they do have phones. There might be a competition challenge in some of the areas. But one of the interesting findings we've seen was that most of the centers that are run by SMEs or entrepreneurs, those centers can operate and they can survive, because there's a level of commitment. There is one center in Limpopo, in Papua, it's also run by an entrepreneur. There's another center in Orange Farm, it's also run by an entrepreneur. Those are the one of the first centers. They're still operating today. It's very, very much commitment. We do believe that with proper handover, that is responsible, those centers can survive. If I can touch the other one, the handing over of computer labs to municipalities, it might be a wording error. On the handover, the community access centers are the ones that, where they are situated within the two-strong service center, who are proposing that it makes sense for them to be handed over to the local municipality. There's different challenges because municipalities financially, they are at different levels. Some municipalities will say, we don't have funds to run this center. We are prepared as a sector to enter into negotiations to say, maybe for the next 2 years or for the next year, we can fund the operations of this center while you're building the cost of this center into your IDP. Those are the areas we're willing to engage with. One of the reasons is the program of the strong service centers, the connectivity is being addressed through the speaker network. Now, it makes sense if there's a computer center in there, it must be connected through the speaker network. And the speaker network is for the government entity. It will make sense if the municipality owns that center. Obviously, they don't have to charge huge prices because they've been subsidized for the whole infrastructure. The school computer lab will be handed over to the Department of Education so that issues of maintenance and security is addressed through the program of the Department of Education. So if I may, on there was a question on 743 schools. That number was accommodating the universal purpose obligations that were given to the operator. That's why you start to make a commitment saying if you connect those schools and give them e-rate, then you are willing to pay for the e-rated amount. Unfortunately, most of the operators did not complete that. That's why it shows that either is the one who completed the connectivity, then we pay the subsidy for it. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the last question on the Millennium Development Goals, I stand to be correct this, but I think there is one goal that relates to SASA that relates to the development of infrastructure for economic growth. That's the one goal that I think there's a relation to. I'm not aware of any national policy on the Millennium Development Goals. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My first question, I want to know from your staff whether do you have a long-term strategy to maintain and then to monitor this community standard, because the core mandate of USASA is to ensure the infrastructure. Now, I don't think your core mandate is to build this center and this water people, whether you give to entrepreneurs or municipalities, but I think it's your responsibility as USASA to make sure that you provide that infrastructure. But now, if you are saying now, the new strategy to build this center and give to someone else to run with it, and they are prepared even to assist municipality for a period of 6 months, then after that municipality must look and must go out and get some funds to ensure these things continue to function. Now, I'm asking myself, do we have a long strategy in terms of monitoring these things and then making sure that everything are in good condition? The other question, what is your criteria to identify the schools in terms of the site area? Because earlier in the morning, Department of Communication gave their own criteria and they are working with the Department of Communication. Are you using the similar approach or you are using your own way of identifying the schools and the effect? On the same issue of universal access, I think that's a core mandate. You are saying you are also assisting equity college, or you are funding certain equity colleges. And the criteria to identify those equity colleges is that they are also providing ICT-related training. Then my question, why are you funding equity colleges that are for regular providing such training instead of supporting students who want to go to ICT field? Because whether you support those FATs, whether you decide also not to support them, they will continue to provide the training to go to support them because they are already in the business, or they are providing. Why are you funding those equity colleges? Can I get two community centers or two strong centers in KZN that are functioning optimally that I can go at any time and visit them and see? That are working. In case whether in Guamishabia, Lingana, or whether in lower south coast or in the northern part of, I want at least two. Two. But how long it took you as a starter to finalize this, what you call the cut-line, you've been in the
definition. Because
I think because it can't, they say they can't function because they don't have a clear definition and things like this. So
okay, thank you. I will start with the question on the long-term monitoring and evaluation strategy to sustain the access center. Currently, the Act makes provision for the staff to pay subsidy. That includes setting up the center and running up the center. It means one needs to look at a model that will be able at least to sustain itself in the longer run. Now, that's where subsidies come in. If at least the center can manage to sustain itself to a certain level, then the center can come in. It is a proof that this is how the center can survive, but it needs this kind of a subsidy. Then the center will always be able to assist in that regard. What we are trying to avoid is a center that will be permanently dependent on the subsidy program. Part of the project that we have right now, we've got a project on the research service and access strategy. One of its stages is to develop a monitoring and evaluation framework for all the centers that are funded by USARSA and beyond. You monitor the level of universal service and access in the whole country so that we can be able to gauge as to are we improving or we're not improving at all. What indicators are we going to be using for that? The second one was the criterion that is used to identify schools. In my previous presentation, I mentioned that when we started with this computer lab at school, it was a silo approach where we would go to schools, request the list from the department, but we go alone to those schools to set up a computer lab. What we've decided to do now, starting from the Dinalese school, the list was coming from the department. And further than the list, it was the actual specification as to what equipment do they use there for what purpose. So we make sure that by the time we set up a computer lab, it complies with the specification and with the plans of the Department of Education. We will be looking at further interactions with the department so that we share the broader strategy, including the connectivity strategy that they're planning for school, so that we work within that plan. Our duty is to subsidize the equipment, ensuring that the equipment is there. Then the DOE should be able to sustain the project according to the department's plan. The question on supporting the FET. The process on FET, it was a collaboration between the Department of Communication, ICEP SESA, and USARSA. Those FETs were going to provide FETs, but there was a challenge as to are they going to be able to fund all the requirements of the ICT so that that training progress is a success. That was the intention of funding the project. It doesn't mean those colleges were already offering that ICTS. The success of that ICTS program would be dependent on this role they are coming in and assist in funding those colleges. The KZN.
Okay. If I may, Honourable Member, the list of schools in KZN, if I could ask you to turn to page 20 and 21 of the annual report. Unfortunately, we did have a few slides, that listed all the cyber labs and all the computer centers and where they are, but it seems like a gremlin deleted them by mistake. We apologize. It's in the
of the court. On page 20, you will see there's number 30 and 31 with 30 therein. These are the schools with the, these are the Dina Lady schools with new Utah Fabulous that were put in the previous financial year. And then on, further down on page 20, you'll see the schools that have rehabilitated Fabulous or refurbished, which is Eastern Cape and Limpopo provinces in the past financial year. And then the subsidized FEC colleges on page 21. Number 3, 4, 5, 3 and 4
are stated in
colleges.
I was asking to some extent as well. To some extent.
I'm sorry, Honourable Chair, we do have it. We can forward a complete list of all the centres, the Tucson centres and where they are in each one. Either after this meeting or by tomorrow we'll send you a list. Detailed. Sorry, we just can't find the slide right now. I don't know what happened to it.
Alright. Mr. Kurani?
No, Chef. One issue, Chef. Come on, sir. I think there's one question there.
The definition process took about, about 8 months. Probably longer. About a year. It took about a year to, because there were initial requests for information that went out in the newspapers, and that was put together into a discussion document, which was then gazetted in the government gazette, and people were given a month or a month and a half to provide written submissions, and then there were presentations. So there was a full-on consultative process. It did take a while. There were working groups and steering committees set up with the ICASA and the DOC, other stakeholders, other government departments, and the ICASA. So ICASA did participate in the process. Yes.
Listening to DOC in the morning, and I do have the inside feed with QuickCast as we engage them from time to time. And also, you look at the issue of Semtex. If you want to complicate it, you look at the issue of impact. You see, all these things is about access and also availability. Maybe I thought they would become something else. Now, sir, I think maybe we are at a point where we need to try to streamline all these things, because clearly they are not working. It's not working. If you listen to DOC, they've got their own things on how to do things and so on, as if UFAFA is not a part of them. If you go to Centec, Centec is like a stepchild somewhere, as if it's not part of DOC, but they are. I'll understand it in fact. I'll give you an example here. If you want to talk about this access and availability, to what extent do we want to deal with the broadband, the wireless broadband network, pulses, linking to USAFA? To what extent do we link that to? With the strategy of USAFA and Centex, as they are saying, they are going to give the broadband network in terms of the wireless. Internal, do you link that with work of UFAFA with infrastructure? We'll try to deal with that in terms of the optic fiber. Where is the meeting point? What complications is the ICASA obligation? We are more confused than anything else. Just giving out obligation which you don't even know. Give Celsius, give MTN, Vodafone and so on, but you know, where you don't. That's why I was asking the question, down to where exactly do we need to examine? What you see, it's not as confused in terms of the obligation. Just even now, if you go to the township and other areas, you'll find back to back is Vodacom, Celsius, MTN,
in one area, they are all there, and then telecom also come with their pay phones in one area. You go to 50 kilometers, there's absolutely nothing. You go to another area, you find them within 2 kilometers, being the 4-4. I don't understand exactly what exactly are we doing in terms of the availability and access to the scene and so on. But the issue which I think, of course, it raises also about its own complication and so on, is the matter that maybe we should reach a point. Maybe not necessarily discussing the necessity of infrastructure, but to say, by the way, the spend when you deal with this universal access issues and availability of wages, center, etc., who must drive that? So, seemingly, currently, there's no driver. It's worse when they're indicating that the DOC, which I seem to agree, is not actually the core driver in terms of ICT, what other initiatives. GTI, one day they wake up with something else, which complicates the work of the DOC and so on. But in terms of ourselves to get a clarity, it might not be a question to yourself, but it is part of the major issues which are seen to be the issues that we need to deal with. To try to locate the who is supposed to lead the ICT, especially in the country. That alone. Secondly, when it comes to this issue of universal access, who is the driver there? Is the CASA? As things stand now, the CASA is not complete in terms of their obligation they just give. You ask them where that those million 3 things which are supposed to be part of obligation for operators, they can't tell you. The issue of SIM card, no one can tell you. Whether it was a good obligation or not is something else. But the fact is that the authority cannot account what is happening and so on. So maybe it's a broader issue. It might be unfair for you, Father, but I think ourselves we need to start to. It's either we call all these institutions one vote. The office and we all these stepchild of yours and everything. What's the issue is about the issue of universal access? Can you tell us exactly? Because it doesn't seem to work. You got the 500 million denarii in school, which comes for free. Then the question is it necessary? You see, I heard the question in the morning. Whether is the technology which is there? Because when you talk to Central, they will say they want us to deal with in terms of why not. But if you use the research, you can deal with the entire 500 school with the 500 million. We don't need any additional money, but the technology which the department prescribed that you must use is more costly for us to roll out. But to give us another option, another technology, you can cover it with that 500 million and so on. That's one. In fact, you can see that there is a gap between the two. And also, said the other issue which you must also look at is the issue of this fund which is collected, being reinvested or not, and so on. That's what is happening there. What I can tell you is, if you get this fund is not reinvested, it can just be used on other things. I don't think the operators can take it lying down. That the money which they are contributing for ICT development, so that money for ICT development. ICASA can have access because they are regulating the industry and so on, but maybe we need to find out from the treasurer the status of that fund. What exactly is happening in that fund and how much it makes in terms of that fund. So it cannot be free for us in terms of that fund and so on. But I think that the committee at one point we need to sit down and check in terms of a coherent structure. In terms of, I'm only concerned about the structure access. What if other things are playing into that, your infra, for what will be the contribution of Centec and so on, and who's contributing at the time, and so on. Maybe after that, we can ask ourselves, including MCDA, we can ask ourselves what can work or what cannot work, how do we move forward, and so on. But I must also ask you, Father, to provide us, because they may put in some studies. That this is from Uganda, Ghana, and various countries in terms of the utilization of the universal service fund, in terms of how best can happen that. If they can also share with us those studies so that we can be able also to go through, so that as we think moving forward you are able to check what is the temporary activity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think everything has summed up quite a bit. I just want to say this much. See, in the presidency, we've got this monitoring and evaluation. I think they are engaged in a serious exercise of looking at government functions, departmental functions, overlap, location of institutions, and things. And that's why I asked the first question. You know, if I have to tell my architect, have you made a convincing case for your own assistant? I'm a friend of mine. And the time has come where, you know, we can't just sustain the structure because we have to sustain. And my suggestion, you know, I didn't want to say the decision of the committee, but we want to think about that, I think, also. What I would really say is, it's really for the board to make a serious self-critical assessment of the continued investment. Comes with a decision or a recommendation, go to the minister and the ministry, and to the president, and say, look, you think this thing should continue for this reason, with this kind of purpose. Or it should be merged with something else. So that we, you know, other things. Because we also have to ask ourselves the value of a small output like NGDA. If we need somewhat money in the rain, they come here and report, they want to remain in the presidency, they want to go to DOT. But what's the point of carrying all this organization? Small budget, big staff, offices, annual reports, they go through the motions. But they're not making any real impact. And they're doing good work here. But the scale is so small that you have to ask yourself, what's the point of carrying this forward forever and ever? So I really think that that's, you know, for you two to make a careful assessment and come with a clear assessment. Of course, we're going to have to review the law. But I think the new ministry is doing a serious review of all of it. You know, we have this great vision and 10 years. But even technology, everything is overtaken. Because we've just been too sluggish as institutions to meet change it again. Things have overtaken us. We can't be fixed to a law when the reality is far more beyond that. So I don't want us to take decisions. I think it's early days, but really we've got to look very carefully at what we are and what we are. That's the only recommendation I think at this stage. First of all, I think your audits are clearing with a few methods of access. We know you're doing your good work, grinding them. We haven't received the support historically from the DOT since I think everybody expected. Neither did we get the support from the staff. We know that the service is wrong. But we must ask ourselves the question, where to from here? If it means closing down, so be it. I'm as cold as that. If it means closing down the operation, then you must take the board decision and close it down. And then look at the staffing needs. And, I mean, you don't want to say junction. But I think we must start making those decisions. We can't just carry on to the sum of the people. Let me thank you then for coming, for being patient with us, and for tripping me. I think we're tripped you today. We didn't expect this. But I think we also want to have an open dialogue on the discussion. I think we'll be failing our people if we don't begin to raise the issues in the world. Cannot just be routine operation. Suddenly, this committee is not interested in it. Want to see what's the value add? What's the overall plan? Are we making impact? If not, not really. Let me thank the team for coming through and for spending so much of time. It's 7 o'clock, I hope. I don't know if we're going to make it back to you for a flat tonight.
No.
All right. So, have you made any arrangements?
It's not open dialogue. Please, can we just respond to that?
No, this is going to be an ongoing discussion.
I really must say, as chairperson of the board, it is impossible for you to ask this organization
on whether we should live or die. It's not our job to answer that question. If you want to ask us, yes, can this country make a bigger impact on ICT and the development of sport, then we will say, of course. And if it means closing down the disaster to achieve that end, then by all means do it. But you cannot ask us, we're a creature of that act. It's impossible for us to review our lifeline and say, should we live or should we die, should we merge or should we change. It's not our job to do so. The DLC is a policy.
That is really respond to that.
But can we be more efficient as a sector? Indeed. Are we fragmented? Indeed. But it's not only in the sector. There's competition in ICTs across every single government department. Everyone's using their money on ICTs in opposition to each other, whether it's on health, or home affairs, or education, or communication. That is a problem. And hopefully, we, as I said, we've given the administration some to fix these problems and integrate government, not just in words, but really. And give the DOC a chance to also integrate things. And if it means merging us with NDA, we should be one organization, or integrating us into the regulator. Those are policy issues. We will get to support whatever government decides to do. That's more effective.
I think the request by the chair is that you are in the realm of this. You understand it better. You see, when you say that you must take a decision, that decision must be not to be well informed. I think what you are asking for is that what are the best practices outside there? Can you help us to understand in terms of what is your view in terms of the manner which you can perform or this decision can be performed more efficiently other than current, whether in the current form or you need certain reforms or what exactly can happen around. That's all what you are asking, General, so that you also help us to move forward in a manner which you have an impact. What I mentioned now is saying, you see, MDA is passing about its way, trying to pass it, but hey, when you find yourself, but hey, what has happened, you know, they don't even see the time. So you might be standing even about your way too fast. What is it which can benefit the country, in especially in this area which you are focusing at? I'm sure that's what the chair is trying to grapple with and the matter which is asking and so on. Of course, in doing so, you might be justifying your existence, that you must be existing. You might also be justifying to say, no, this thing is not working, in another force, offering a force in order.
Let me just say, in fact, you might think that we're being difficult. We're actually expressing a vote of confidence. With the fact that we're asking you to go and individual, independent yourself, review where you're going and whether you shouldn't go. Because we think you'll come with an honest answer. We wouldn't say that in time. You see, the law says today that you must have 9 councillors and you must have this and you have this. And I know the ministry has asked the Chancellor for the doing a review of a legislation, what recommendations have you got to make? I don't want to say policy here because it's from the media. But I have a sense of what they said. They said people are still doomsday. Now you see, so then other people would have to say, no, but look, how do we reconfigure this? In the interest of the country, because they can't make an objective assessment themselves. We're asking you to go and make an objective assessment because you're on the ground and come back and say, you see, I don't think you must just say, we have to the department, they must tell us what to do. We have to approve your funds. And tomorrow, if we say that the committee, we are not going to support this town, next year, but when the budget goes down, we all have to say, if you are not going to be approving this fund, this fund, and this fund, shut them down then. We can tell you the department. We're not approving this book. But before we come to this point, there must be some objective assessment and evaluation. Are we asking you to understand this? Don't I ask what is the message? He said, look, we think we not make it to the center. Either we meet up to or we define the mandate, whatever it is, we find it, and that's it. Otherwise, we actually just waste the 30 million that year. But I'm very interested that the next year, when we come to budget growth, we are not just going to give a green light. We can't. And that's why Minister Chobani's output is so very important, because they are supposed to be assessed. This institution, the department over there, the computer, and you can't work with a framework of change. It's a serious exercise, we're not just trying to tell you, oh, we're asking you to undertake a very serious exercise. Good, let us end then. Thank you very much, members. It's gone way beyond the time. Tomorrow morning, the program is this year. 8 o'clock, we will leave. We will be taken not to Melbourne Front immediately. We will be taken to some venue for a full briefing by the Expo of Telcom. And from there, we are going to Melbourne Front as soon as that briefing is completed. Access the national key point, so there isn't free access, and you come in with your own card on it. There's a logistics involved in that. And we're all leaving from here. So even if you come in with your vehicle, please meet us exactly outside here at 8 o'clock. So you have to go in the convoy and you go in the convoy. But you're not just going to get access to this point. It's not the SAGC or sense like a secret. It's going to be other side of the night. So please remember on time tomorrow, because quite a long program, and then and because we've got this complicated arrangement, we should be back by 2 or 2:30 tomorrow. Thank you very much.